This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
Well, the FIFA World Cup, it's meant to unite nations through sport, but a visa controversy involving a Somali referee has sparked international debate ahead of the tournament. Omar Abdulkadir Atan, who was set to become the first Somali official to referee at a FIFA World Cup, has reportedly been denied entry to the United States and will no longer participate despite being selected as one of Africa's leading match officials. Now, the incident has raised broader questions about immigration policies, also the obligations to host countries, and whether political decisions can undermine the global spirit of sport. Let's analyze and unpack this controversy. We're joined now by veteran sports broadcaster, radio presenter, and podcast host, Louis Karpus. Louis, good afternoon to you. It's great having you on board and great to be chatting to you again. Welcome.
Always lovely to chat to you, Michael. And generally speaking, the interviewer doesn't get thrown a question by the interviewee, but I'm going to ask you this question before we even get going.
Right.
Haven't you found that it's most underwhelming World Cup in decades? I mean, it's almost like it's not really happening. There's just there's a game of football that's going to happen somewhere in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. It's just been marred with controversy and controversial issues and off-the-field drama from South Africa's having a yellow card, suspensions, and game turned over, 3-0 result turned over. It's just bizarre.
Louis, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I did put this question to listeners before. I mean, think back to the days when major sporting events were the highlight of one's lifestyle, if you can put it that way. Well, there's the FIFA World Cup. Remember the Olympics also, what that meant, and other major sporting events. But because now we find ourselves in the early 21st century, where we're inundated with politics and with morals and all these other kind of shenanigans, all these events have just lost their spark. As you say, this is just another match being played, and the magnitude of that, of this tournament and the other sporting events, they're gone. They're history.
Very much so. And I think a lot of it's also got to do with the fact that it's so readily available to us right now. I mean, in years gone by, you would sit up and wait for games of football, for a rugby World Cup, a cricket World Cup, a golf tournament, because they weren't all so readily available to you. Now, whether you have a subscription, a pay-per-view, just a cell phone in your hand, you can find it wherever it is, and we're becoming far more picky as to what we want to watch. But back to your story with who is the 2025 referee of the year in Africa, voted for by the Confederation of African Football. And I've been following the story for a couple of days now, and it's very interesting because politicians have got involved in this, but FIFA have always been an organization that has said politics will never enter into the game of football, and have been very, very strenuously in terms of upholding that rule by even banning countries from participation, including Kenya, Mexico, Brazil. Other countries have been part of Zimbabwe, our neighbors, where FIFA have actually banned them from any FIFA competitions. And yet the World Cup head of the White House task force happens to be Andrew Giuliani, and that surname might ring a bell.
Oh, the mayor, the son of the mayor of Giuliani,
exactly.
New York mayor,
exactly. Correct.
Yeah.
He's the son of the former New York mayor. He was asked specifically about this decision that was taken, where no player or coach, according to him, had been denied their visas. However, some officials have been denied, and for good reason. Now, they have subsequently released a story just a few hours ago that apparently there were suspicions of terrorist activities. So the U.S. State Department said that the referee was associated with suspected members
I was
of
wondering
terrorist
about
organizations,
that. Okay.
Therefore making the traveler ineligible for admission to the United States. The problem that he and anybody else has, you have to come through the United States to get to Mexico, Canada, even though he might not have been officiating or has been asked to officiate outside of the United States. That is where it it is coming from. So he apparently was in an 11-hour interview with border officials. He says he was then taken to a separate holding cell where he was detained for a few hours further before he was put on a flight back to Istanbul, and he is now back at home.
Wow.
He, in fact, is going to a football match this afternoon, and he says that he will be officiating at the 2030 World Cup. Mm-hmm. He's back in Somalia. The thing is that he is the best referee on the African continent, and voted for by the Confederation of African Football. He has officiated Cup of Nations, Champions League, African Champions League finals, Cup of Nations events in the finals as well. And he holds a diplomatic passport and has a single entry US visa. So not exactly sure how what the reasons for all of that were. However, it has now come about that due to his apparent links to terrorist organizations, he has been denied entry into the United States. Let's not forget, though, that just at the end of last year, Donald Trump put Somalia on that no entry list and has denied anybody entry from that country because of what he describes as affiliation with terrorist organizations. So he does come from a country which is on the banned list, if you like, mm-hmm. who can't get visas to come into the United States, which then begs the question, why was he given a visa in the first place?
Right.
So I don't really know.
But Louis, at the
so
same...
So interesting.
I know. There's so many, aspects we could interrogate from that. But to add to that story, I came across a story earlier on where also Senegalese players were subject to interrogation and searches happening at U.S. airports.
You know, Michael, I don't know if you've ever had to apply for a visa to go to the United States. It is one of the most difficult visas to apply for. And my best one is they actually ask you a simple question on that visa application form. Are you a terrorist? I mean,
yes, I recall that question.
How many of us are going to say, are you? Yes, of course I'm a terrorist. Well, I mean, how does that work?
Right.
So with all of the issues that are going on politically with ICE and illegal immigration and all the rest of it, and you know what, this is not unfamiliar to when there was an Iron Curtain, and you might remember when your countries from behind the Iron Curtain would go to an Olympics and then look for a political asylum. They would run away from their country. Mm-hmm. They would use sports events. So I guess... you know, it's like, don't ever moan when you stopped in a roadblock if you are legal. You know, and I guess that's the same way if you really look at it like that. Coming into a tournament like this and any other tournament, bearing in mind there are going to be billions of people watching on television and millions of spectators in and around events and the security with what's going on with the United States, Iran, Israel, and others around the world at the moment, you can understand... Yeah. And you would like, as a fan in the stadiums, to know that you're safe. Let's be honest. I mean, it's all about the fans, which doesn't seem to be, because every controversy that's going on around this World Cup, including, I might add, which drives me mad, is again the banning of vuvuzelas. I mean, come on, how can a little plastic horn be a weapon? I mean, I just don't get it. That doesn't make sense to me.
You know, Louis, let's look at FIFA. FIFA's stance in this picture. So FIFA has stated that immigration decisions ultimately rest with the host country. But do you think FIFA could or should have done more to ensure that officials selected for the tournament would be able to participate? Could they have intervened on a stronger basis?
No. And the reason I say no is because of their policy of no governmental organization getting involved in football. So they can't then turn around and say, well, we're going to ban Zimbabwe because their government got involved in footballing matters, particularly at administrative level, and then turn around themselves and then do exactly that. So I think from that point of view, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. But the question that I still ask, and obviously one you and I can't answer, is why give the guy a visa in the first place? Deny him a visa if you believe that he's on a list of countries that cannot get visas to go into the country. Because how would you then allow him to go in and another person from Somalia applies for a visa and they turn down? So you've got to, you know, it's got to be either 100% or 0%. You can't have, you know, selective visas for countries that are on a banned list rightly or wrongly, whether they're on the banned list or not.
I mean, could controversies like this perhaps damage FIFA's reputation or the credibility of future tournaments for that matter?
You know what, Michael? FIFA, unfortunately or fortunately, are in a wonderful position where, as I mentioned before, a billion people are going to watch this World Cup. At the end of it, like every Olympic game, somebody is going to stand up and say it was the best World Cup ever, although we still say, and most people agree, that 2010 was still the best World Cup that they've ever had. FIFA are trying to take the game around the world. And unfortunately, like anything in life, when the tournament kicks off tomorrow evening, nobody's going to think of this poor Somalian referee who didn't get an opportunity to referee at the World Cup. There are many players who caught an injury 2 weeks ago, a week ago, who have been dropped from the team. I mean, the controversy surrounding Bafana Bafana taking a squad of players to a function to announce the team without the players who aren't going, making them sit in a dinner, is just bizarre. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to have done that to young kids. We must never forget the fact, whether we see them on TV or not, outside of Ronaldo, these guys are in their early 20s. Think about what you were doing in your early 20s. Think of the disappointment when you got left out of your school's first team.
Right.
Now you're being left out of you're right there till the last second. Obviously, only a certain number can go. But there's some kind of diplomacy that needs to take place. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, the tournament will kick off tomorrow evening at 9 o'clock. We'll all be blowing our vuvuzelas here in South Africa. We'd all be watching, fingers crossed, that Bafana Bafana can actually score a goal. And once the tournament gets going, all of the other stuff will be forgotten. We'll get upset because there'll be a bad refereeing decision. There's a VAR that we all think wasn't offside, that was, and vice versa. And it'll all be forgotten eventually in 30-something days' time, 32 days, whatever it is from now. We'll all hopefully be sitting up and watching a World Cup final, and we'll turn around and say what a wonderful final it was. Generally, it's not. Generally, it's a penalty shootout, a boring draw.
we hope not.
Time with some kind of controversy. We hope. Of course we hope. But it's at the end of the day, the sport will prevail, and FIFA will always come out smelling like roses. They will. That's just how it is. Their propaganda machine will make sure that that happens.
Now, Louis, as we wrap up, I wish I could spend more time with you, you know, interrogating or looking at the teams a bit closer, but maybe that's for another discussion. But looking beyond this individual case, from your perspective, Louis, what broader lessons does the story teach us about the increasingly complicated relationship between global sport, national borders, and international politics? What do you make of that?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know what? Yes, I might be an old fuddy-duddy, but I mean...
Don't worry, you're not the only one.
sport and politics, unfortunately, have always mixed, you know, in one way or another.
Sure.
It's been used way back in the 80s and early 90s, early 80s. I think of Nas Porter and the Springbok rugby team having to sleep in a dressing room underneath an ice-cold stadium in a rugby tour to New Zealand during the height of apartheid, and people flying aeroplanes over the Waikato Stadium and dropping flower bombs on spectators. Peter Haney with his anti-apartheid stance. Sam Ramsamy, who eventually the world turned from being an apartheid activist, anti-apartheid activist, and a man who was so resolute about South Africa not participating in sport to end up being the head of our Olympic committee. It all comes and goes. So I just wish, like I think most of us do, that we could separate the two. But unfortunately, we're never going to be able to, by virtue of the fact that it's country versus country.
Yeah.
When Liverpool play Manchester United or Fenerbahce play Real Madrid or whatever, it's a club versus a club. And then we get to the club versus country situation. Once you are representing your country, you're traveling on a passport from your country and you're going into another country, politics one way or another is always going to be an issue. Always. But I hope, you know, FIFA have tried their absolute best. They've been increased the size of this World Cup. We've got more African teams than have ever been in the World Cup. Whether they've got a chance of getting out of the second round of the it's almost unthinkable. Three tournaments, I think it is, in a row that Italy have not been there.
And I'm very disappointed about that, but okay. As I said, for another discussion.
Sure. Yeah, the whole of Orange Grove is going to have, nobody's going to be watching football in Orange Grove over the next couple of weeks because the Azori are not there. Mm-hmm. And then Just on another note, I mean, this whole week's controversy all about Kim Kardashian and Martin Brundle in the pit lane in Monaco. What about the 19-year-old teenager, Kimi Antonelli, who's unbelievable? You know, most people in South Africa don't have a driving license at 19. The guy's won 5-6 Grand Prix in a row driving a motor car. Wow. It's not really a motor car. I mean, it's a Formula One car at ridiculous speeds around the track. He's better than Verstappen, and he's most probably going to be better than Ayrton Senna. But we're talking about Kim Kardashian. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God.
Life sure dishes up its surprises, Louis. Just to recap, the World Cup starts tomorrow. It's Bafana Bafana versus Mexico, yep. South African time, 9 o'clock, correct? In the evening, of course.
Absolutely. And isn't it amazing how the opening game of the 2010 World Cup was South Africa versus Mexico, and now it is the reverse, with obviously Mexico being the hosts and South Africa being drawn in the same group as them. And then just the unfortunate part, and obviously we can't change this, the time difference. Some of the games are at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then even the odd game at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I will tell you one thing, 7:30 every morning, I'll give you a wrap of everything that happened the night before in the World Cup.
Awesome.
And I will be very glad to chat to you for the next 30-something days every now and again. And, Michael, one thing that we can be guaranteed, there will be controversy.
Certainly. In one way or another, on and off the field. Louis, it's been great chatting to you once again. Everything of the best, Louis, and enjoy the World Cup. Louis Karpis, veteran sports broadcaster, radio presenter, and podcast host. It was certainly great chatting to my friend Louis once again, helping us unpack a story that sits at the intersection of sport, politics, and global mobility. Well, the World Cup has always been about bringing the world together through football. Is it still? But as this incident reminds us, even the world's biggest sporting event cannot always escape the realities of politics, immigration policy, national security concerns, and of course, international, I'm going to put it this way, shenanigans.